It's a fun exercise in compare and contrast right now on Travel with Rick Steves as we look at the common threads and the distinctions between the Scandinavian countries. Representing Denmark is Jena Clausen. Our Swedish ambassador is Åsa Danielsson. And from Norway, Paul Johansson is our guest. Michael joins us on the phone right now at 877-333-RICK from Denver, Colorado. Hi, Michael.
Oh, thank you for having me.
Yeah, do you have a comment or a question for our guests?
Yes, I'm half Swedish, and I've traveled a lot in Sweden, and I also have very good friends in Norway, so it's sort of a comparison between the two. My wife and I were doing genealogy research in Sweden, and we were looking for living relatives. My grandmother came from Sweden to the United States, and we had lost contact with the relatives in Sweden. When we found the relatives, my cousin that we met was very warm and outgoing, and he took us over to one of the other relatives' house. And when we got there, I don't want to say they were cold, but they were extremely reserved. We had kind of a nervous half hour or so trying to meet these other Swedish relatives. In Norway, on the other hand, our Norwegian friends are very friendly, and we've traveled extensively in Norway all the way from Kristiansand down in the south to Trondheim in the north.
So your experience was the Swedes were not as warm as the Norwegians. And I think to get our take on our guests, I'm first going to ask our Danish friend, Jena. From a Danish perspective, Michael in Colorado, from the Great Rockies perspective, found the Swedes cold and the Norwegians warm. I know it's dangerous to make sweeping generalizations.
It is dangerous, but I think that's one of the generalizations that you can probably make. I don't think it's because the Swedes are unfriendly. They just want to kind of see, who is this dude from Denver?
And they want to get the job done, whereas the Norwegians are going to talk like a kindergarten
exactly.
teacher.
Exactly.
How
think,
are you doing?
I think probably
nice
Norwegians and Danes are more likely to thrust a beer in the guest's hand and invite them in for dinner, where the Swedes just want to kind of take a look and see, what is this all about?
And I remember when the Olympics were in Lillehammer, and it was like 3 months before the Olympics, and they still weren't finished, and everybody was thinking, when are they going to let the Swedes come in and get this organized? So there is that Swedish, you know, industrialness. Also, what is your take on this? Do you have a defense?
I do. Sweden is a big country. It's the biggest country in Scandinavia, and we're also the most populous country. We have enormous differences, whether we are talking about a Swede from the north and a Swede from the south, or from the east, or from the west. If you talk about the Swede from the west coast, from Gothenburg, they're so happy and friendly and inviting. If you talk about
shipwrecked Norwegians.
Okay. No, but then if you talk about the Swede in the north, they're famous for, they don't even use the word ja, which means yes. They use this sound. That means yes for the northern Swedes.
Okay.
So you have they use very few words and can seem quite reserved.
So very straight, practical.
Yes. And then if people in the, yeah, they're different from all parts. And the Stockholmers in Sweden are famous for being quite reserved. All of the other Swedes are making jokes about the Stockholmers
being reserved.
Well,
the big city. Michael.
This was from a very, very small town in far western Sweden called Åmotsfors, near Arvika and northwest of Karlstad. But I have a more difficult question for you. My Norwegian friend has sort of an affectation where he will, when he talks in English, of course, he will pause and have sort of an inhale, where he inhales with his mouth open and it makes kind of a rushing sound. I read the book Culture Shock, Sweden, about Sweden, and it mentioned the same thing. Do you have comments on that?
Are you talking about a Norwegian or a Swede?
Yeah, I'm talking about the Norwegian.
Yeah, Paul, what is with this? Because my relatives all do this.
Is it like this?
Yeah, exactly.
Oh, that's a, we do that in Sweden too.
It's sort of like an acknowledgement, like a very vague acknowledgement. Yeah.
No, like I would say it's actually showing that you're listening.
Yeah.
So if I'm looking at a person, just looking at that person is not enough. You have to acknowledge that you're following them.
Oh. I'm breathless listening to every word.
Exactly. So to be silent would be really slightly rude.
That's like, I'm with you. And that's exactly I get in Norway. And hey, Michael, you put your finger on something there.
Well, at first we thought it was just a personal kind of thing until I read this book on Sweden where it said that the Swedes do it somewhat also.
Yeah. We hear you.
we're with you, Michael. Thanks for your call, Michael.
Okay, thank you.
Take care. Bye now.
Thank you. Bye.
This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're joined by Jena, Åsa, and Paul from Denmark, Sweden, and Norway. We're talking about the differences in Scandinavia. And Frank's calling in from Newport Richey in Florida. Frank, thanks for your call.
Hi, Rick. It's great to talk to you and your Scandinavian guides.
Yeah.
I used to live in Sweden for a while, and one of the things that I found was that I think even in the Swedes consider that they are a bit more reserved and much less outgoing than the Norwegians and the Danes, and I just wondered what your panel thought of that.
I can give a comment on behalf of the Norwegians, because Norwegians as well, they have a reputation for being a bit shy and reserved. But I always tell the tour members I bring to Scandinavia that although the Norwegians might seem a bit shy, engage them, mm-hmm. because they are very curious. And Norwegians also, they like Americans. They're very interested in American culture, and mm-hmm. and we've been under a lot of influence since after the Second World War by the U.S. So they're very curious to talking to Americans, and they're also very proud of talking about their country.
Maybe I can also jump in with a comment about if we say that the Norwegians are shy and Swedes might at times be reserved, many people perceive the Danes as being gregarious. And,
that's true.
You know, maybe trying to be a little bit better than Norwegians and the Swedes. And a few years ago, there was a survey in Scandinavia about who liked each other the most. And supposedly, the Swedes liked the Danes the most. The Norwegians liked the Danes the most. The Finns liked the Danes the most. The Icelanders liked the Danes the most. And the Danes liked the Danes the most.
So the Danes are just so darn likable. There you go, Frank. Thanks for your call.
Well, yeah, it's great. Of course, you know, the Danes are the ones that celebrate our 4th of July, too.
Yeah,
they do celebrate the 4th of July. They do it in the Rebel Hills in Jutland. And they usually have a high-profile speaker come from America. It could be once we had Janet Reno, who was of Danish descent, and we usually have, you know, other key figures along with a Danish prime minister or ex-prime minister show up. They sing American songs, and they sing Danish songs, and they have a fantastic time.
Across the board, a lot of Scandinavians emigrated. Life was tough up there in the 1800s and went to the promised land, the new land. America, and found their opportunity. Taksimika, Frank, for calling in.
Tak.
I like that. Tak. This is Travel with Rick Steves. We're talking about Scandinavia with Paul, Åsa, and Jena. And we're talking a little bit about jokes between Scandinavians to illustrate the differences. Paul, I know the Norwegians wouldn't be mean-spirited because you're so darn friendly, but are there some fun little jokes that you make about the Danes and the Swedes that illustrate differences that you see between the cultures?
Mm-hmm. Well, actually, the Norwegians, they don't do many jokes about the Danes for some reason. But we really like to make jokes about the Swedes.
The big brother.
The big brother, or the sweet brother, as we call the Swede, actually.
You actually say the Swede brother?
Yes, we do. Like sweet, sweet brother, sweet sister, as they are so nice and political correct, trying to do everything after the rules.
So what is the joke?
I'll take a joke, a Swedish joke.
And then Åsa will get her chance.
Yeah.
For sure.
I think you heard it before, Rick. So how many Swedes does it take to put in a light bulb?
Oh, I can imagine what the answer is. How many?
Well, you need at least five. You need one to hold the bulb and four to go around with a chair.
Those brilliant, hardworking Swedes. Okay, Åsa, your chance.
Well, the thing is, we have the same kind of jokes, but we call them Norgehistorier.
What does that mean?
Jokes about Norwegians.
Norwegian
so we have
jokes.
The same exact joke. How many Norwegians does it take to do a light bulb? But okay, I'll give you another one. Why does a Norwegian always have a sandpaper with him when he goes out in the desert?
I have no idea.
Because they're afraid to go there without a map.
Touché. That's pretty good. Jena, would you like to jump in with any joke making fun of
you? You know, it's funny. We don't really seem to make too many jokes about the other Scandinavian countries. I think the jokes are all interchangeable.
It just kind of depends
on...
It's sort of a family.
It is a family. It is a back family. But I think the bottom line is that the Scandinavians really like each other. And that's probably why we can tell these jokes without anybody going to war.
Going to war. Well, thank goodness. Now, every country in Scandinavia, I believe, has a royal family, all a constitutional monarch.
Yes, and they are family also.
How so?
They are actually related to each other.
Oh, are they? The
yes.
Scandinavian royals?
Yes. So
Denmark,
they are also
Norway,
family.
And Sweden.
Yeah, they are. So now, they know each other and they visit each other. And
of course, well, what is the position of a king or a queen in the modern age in Scandinavia? It seems sort of antiquated.
Well, it is. But it's a way of kind of combining our history. And the king or the queen, they literally have no political power at all. They're only figureheads. So they are there to basically cut ribbons and inaugurate things and wave to the people. But there is also a very different feeling towards between the people and the royalty in the different countries. I would say that in Sweden, we have the least closeness to our royal family.
So they have a ceremonial role there, but
yes,
the support for that is getting more skeptical.
So he's the one with the, our Swedish king is the one with the least political power of them all.
Now, Paul, I saw you reacting to Åsa there.
Actually, the Norwegian king, and I believe the Danish queen, they have some powers left. The Norwegian king has to sign all the laws that are passed by the government. But it has never happened that he didn't sign a law.
So his role is really to keep Norway together and to be the figurehead, to sort of the ceremonial. And when we think of the awkwardness of our president having to be the head of government and also the ceremonial, the guy at all the fancy ceremonies, it would be convenient to have one person that does that and the other person that gets down and dirty in the politics.
Yeah, it is.
So the royals of Scandinavia can stay ideally above the politics. Jana, what about Denmark?
It's the same thing in Denmark. The figurehead, the queen in this case, does sign the laws. But we also say that the monarchy, the constitutional monarchy, is really a guarantee of democracy because it is the last way they can protest. That is by not signing the law and thereby indicating that there's something wrong.
So they are actually the voice of the people.
They are the voice of the people, supposedly. And if they do not like that law, they could choose not to sign it. But, of course, there would be consequences for them. But also, we say in Denmark, if the queen doesn't like the law, it's because there's something rotten in the state of Denmark.
I've heard that one. Now, has that ever happened?
It has never happened.
So they have that option.
They have that option.
But it's a reminder to the government.
It is a reminder. And, of course, there would no longer be a monarchy in Denmark if she didn't sign.
They overstepped there. Yeah.
And actually in Norway, every Friday, the government, they go to the castle and they have a meeting with the king. And then they go through all the different topics and the king comments
on
all the laws. Yeah, he does.
Oh, that's great.
Every Friday, he meets the government.
And I know in each of the capitals, Oslo, Stockholm, and Copenhagen, the royal palace is actually not so much in Norway. Mm-hmm. In Copenhagen and Stockholm, you can go to the palace and tour it. Mm-hmm. And it's quite an exciting tour.
And this is also something that the royalty in Scandinavia has in common. They're very down to earth and you can bump into them on the streets.
You actually bump into your royal family in
Stockholm?
Yes,
all of them. I've seen the crown princes take the second class train, sitting at the seat in the second class train, just as a normal Swede. The king as well, you can see him drive to work every day in his car. He doesn't have a driver. He drives himself. Yeah, so they are very accessible and we see them quite a lot.
And I also bumped into the Norwegian crown prince quite a few times at concerts in Oslo.
Yeah,
you just see this guy standing in the back with a beer in his hand. And isn't that the crown prince? Oh, yes, it is.
We had the crown princess of Norway in this studio right here.
Oh, really? Mette Marit.
And she was writing a book that was How Children Can Understand Royalty.
Oh.
And she was traveling around the United States on a book tour. And she was so charming and so approachable.
But there was a lot of controversy when she was to marry the crown prince because she is a girl of the people.
Mm-hmm.
She's not of nobility or of royalty.
So she married into the royal family.
She married into the royal family. And she also had a child.
Single
from
mother.
From a previous
single mother, yes.
You're kidding.
Marriage.
A single mother married the royal prince.
Yes.
Those Norwegians.
And they met at a music festival in the south of Norway.
And they talked that way. Tell me again how they would have said, hello, how are you today?
I play. Har du det bra?
Har du
det bra?
Har du det bra? Takk for meg.
Vil du gifte deg med meg?
We're all speaking Norwegian here. This is Travel with Rick Steves. We've been learning about Scandinavia and laughing about how cheery the Norwegians sound. Our guides have been Paul Johansen, Åsa Danielsen, and Jana Clausen. And I would say in any of these languages, tusen takk. Does that work?
Yep.
It works.
Tusen takk,
A thousand thanks.
Det var hyggeligt.
Varsågod.
Tusen takk.
Tusen takk. some people say that the harder you have to work to enjoy a great view, the more you'll appreciate it, especially when you venture into territory where you're not at the top of the food chain. A couple summers ago, travel writer Christopher Solomon went on a rugged camping trip in Alaska's Aniakchak Wilderness, where the bears far outnumber the humans. He wrote about what his rugged experience taught him for Outside Magazine, and Chris joins us right now for a quick look at the value of earning an amazing view the hard way. In your article, you wrote, "The colors are always brighter if a place draws a little blood first." That's a fascinating observation. Tell us a little more about that.
There's a wonderful, incredibly legendary mountaineer named Fred Bakke, and he once said in a book about the North Cascades in Washington State that beauty is paid for partly in the currency of suffering. What I've always loved about that is I think there's something about working hard to get somewhere that sharpens the experience once you've made it.
Oh, and you appreciate it more. If you climb to a peak or if you're dropped there by a helicopter, it's beautiful either way, but one way you earn it and you probably savor it a little differently.
And I suppose there's a tipping point in which this no longer applies so well, or diminishing returns. But in some sense, you never forget the times that you'd rather not remember at some point.
that's true. It's that's in the retrospect, at a minimum, it's a beautiful experience. You also wrote in a different article, but I just love the way you write about wilderness experiences. You're on another Alaskan adventure, and you wrote, "I'll admit, too, to enjoying the fear that can accompany such seclusion." You wrote, "Friends and I spent days fishing at a fly-in forest service cabin on Martin Lake in Copper River Delta outside Cordova in Alaska." And you wrote, "I still remember the afternoon we stood in the lake and hauled in a huge trout, only to see a very large brown bear squinting at us from the shore as if gauging whether we were worth the effort. He left tracks larger than coffee cans and snuffled through our dreams all night." So you're laying there thinking that that bear knew where you were and he already sussed you out. There are a few thrills that can quite match the electric prickle on the neck that comes with knowing one no longer stands atop the food chain. Tell me more about that feeling when you're out in the middle of nowhere and you realize you're no longer top on the food chain.
I was thinking about this a lot in Aniakchak, where in the crater there were bear tracks the size of garden rakes.
And there was no service. You couldn't dial 911.
Oh, no. We had a sat phone for emergencies, but they would never get there. They'd get there in time to sweep up your remains if they could find any. I think what I like, Rick, is that when you realize that you're a potential crudité, it hones your sense of where you are. And you're very aware of your surroundings. And either you like that prickle on the back of the neck, or you don't like it. And within reason, if I've taken the right precautions, I like it a great deal.
Up next, Calvin Alexander Ramsey explains how African American travelers had to rely on a special guidebook when taking road trips around the USA not so many years ago. Learn about the Green Book next on Travel with Rick Steves.